This week, a suicide bomb on a subway train in St. Petersburg killed an estimated 14 people and injured dozens more. What does it all mean? We go to Joshua Yaffa, contributor to The New Yorker and a fellow at New America, who joins us from Moscow. Joshua, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
So it's always spoken of by commentators in Russia that whatever we may say about Vladimir Putin over the last few years, the continuing sort of protest movements and demonstrations against the government have gone on, but this rises above what we've seen before. Can you explain and set them in context?
You're right in suggesting that since the last wave of anti-Kremlin protests in 2011 and 2012, the streets have been relatively quiet. Putin returned for a third presidential term. The protest movement seemed rather defanged, somewhat demoralized, and it really was 5-6 years until the events of last Sunday when people in these kinds of numbers came out into the streets. And I think what's most interesting and perhaps most worrying for the Kremlin is, unlike 2011 and 2012, when the protests were really centered in Moscow, a bit in St. Petersburg, but the drop-off was pretty severe after that. You saw protests in 80 to 100 cities around Russia. Granted, some of those protests were quite small, a couple hundred people, but the mere fact that they were happening in places that previously had seen no kind of anti-Putin, anti-Kremlin protest whatsoever, I think marks a new era and one that is certain to be confusing and worrying for the Kremlin, that now has to figure out how to create a kind of either counter-messaging to these protests, how to nip them in the bud, how to respond with the usual measures of co-optation, pressure, and so on, in places that they haven't really had to use those measures before, and with constituencies they haven't really had to use those methods before.
And what you're underscoring there is yes, the geographic distribution is significant, but it's also very, very difficult in the current Putin environment to organize anything across that wide of a scale. And the fact that they were able to do that is very, very significant, even if the numbers don't, you know, wow everybody in every particular district.
That's correct. And I think it speaks to the fact that the message, a certain anti-corruption populism, appeals across geographic borders within Russia, appeals across kind of socio and economic categories of various populations scattered throughout those different cities. And I think it's that message, one of anti-corruption, a certain fatigue, dissatisfaction, exhaustion with the ruling elite that has been in power now for 17 years, that the Kremlin doesn't really have a great counter message to that kind of populist sentiment. They may not necessarily need to come up with one. There are lots of tools and instruments and levers of influence and political control that, of course, the Kremlin still enjoys, and it's quite likely that Putin can win re-election next year when presidential elections are scheduled for the spring of 2018 without necessarily having to solve this particular problem.
But going further, I'm wondering if there's a possible populist message in the attack itself on the train, in that someone is trying to say to the people of Russia, you're no longer safe, Putin can't protect you, look out. I don't know if that's the message that gets through, but if it is that a worry to Vladimir Putin?
It would be unwise analytically to combine those two events and see something overly similar in them. Just like anywhere else in the world, we wouldn't think to combine in our kind of political analytical framework a peaceful protest and a terrorist attack. That said, the fact that this attack did happen in St. Petersburg, Russia's second largest city, suggests that terrorism, too, is an issue, just like it's been for years now, that the Kremlin will have to deal with and to take into account and prioritize. But really, going back to Russia's wars in Chechnya and then an insurgency that spread throughout the North Caucasus, with fighters at times coming into central Russia, including Moscow, to stage attacks, that's an issue the Kremlin has had to think about and deal with for some time. Of course, the war in Syria and the rise of ISIS and the fact that a large number of Russians and Russian speakers have gone to Syria and come back creates a heightened challenge for Russian and security services. And they've certainly been on the lookout for an attack of this type for some time. But again, I think in terms of the reasons and the motivations for why these events happened and their political significance, it would be analytically incorrect to blend together the protest of last week and the attack in the St. Petersburg metro.
Joshua Yaffa is a contributor to The New Yorker and a fellow at New America, and he joined us from Moscow. Joshua, thanks so much.
Thank you.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.